It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theriot is back from CES. Mary Jo Foley never left New York. She's typical Manhattanite. We're going to talk about Microsoft's AI strategy, because Cortana was really kind of invisible at CES. What's the plan, Stan? Windows 10, we got the new version of Redstone 4, and a little talk about Meltdown Inspector and the mitigations that are available to you as a Windows user. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theriot and Mary Jo Foley, episode 553, recorded Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. Even Paul can't read it all. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, right? That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by IT Pro TV, the fun and entertaining way to sharpen your IT skills. Visit itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Redmond, Washington, home to the Cleveland Indians. No, home to Microsoft.
The fighting Redmondites.
Is there a minor league ball club in Redmond?
There are all of them, Leo.
That's Paul Theriot. Waggish. The waggish Paul Theriot. He's back home from CES, and he seems fairly healthy, which is a remarkable miracle.
Yep. I have incredible, what is it? Not dexterity. Constitution.
He's got an incredible constitution. Much like this nation, Paul has an incredible constitution. And that's Mary Jo Foley, who didn't go to Vegas, but is a little scratchy in the throat, I think.
I know. Figure.
You should have gone to Vegas.
Should have gone.
Paul is at Theriot.com. Mary Jo's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And between the two of them, there are nobody better at covering the latest from Microsoft. The AI company. I think that's the new tagline. Microsoft, the AI company. Right?
Can't spell Microsoft without AI. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Maybe you can.
Wait a minute. So
why do we want to talk about this?
This is Mary Jo's story, I think, yeah.
Because you know what? We talked a lot last week about Cortana and how a lot of people just think those personal digital assistants are what constitutes AI. But there's a lot more to AI than these smart or pseudo-smart kind of PDAs.
Is this backfilling to make up for the fact that Microsoft Cortana got no attention at CES and Google and Amazon got all the attention at CES? Is that what this is?
No, actually, because I think Paul and I both agree that Cortana's kind of in trouble right now at Microsoft. Yeah. But I think people don't understand the whole picture. And this week there was a report that came out in Windows Central about something that Brad actually had written about before, too.
It was a report from last June, if you consider Brad's article. But yes.
Right. So the idea is, you know, everybody's been talking about Cortana's going to be decoupled from being the front end of search.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, you know, when Cortana was born, I actually went back and looked at the first time I wrote about Cortana. It was 2013. Wow. And the idea back then was, here is this front end assistant that works on top of Bing, right? So as Cortana evolved, it was pretty much, I used to always say, Cortana is the lipstick on the Bing pig, right? Cortana was the pretty front end to Bing.
Oh, man. I would get a phone call if I ever called it that.
I called it that a few times. Maybe that's why they never talked to me on that team. but now what they're going to do, and we've all heard this, Brad's heard it and Windows Central's heard it, I've heard it too, is they're going to take Cortana away from search. So the idea is Microsoft wants you to think Cortana is something more than just a front end to Bing. And both Brad and Windows Central have heard the way they're going to do this is in some future Windows 10 release, they're going to take Cortana out of where it sits now in the search box and put it somewhere else. Windows Central here is they're going to put it in the Action Center. So a lot of people are freaking out. They're like, wow, Cortana's already in trouble. Now they're going to make it even less visible. Well, I think you have to go back and look at what is the goal of Cortana and what is Microsoft's goal in AI. And the goal of Cortana is to be more kind of an under the covers thing, even though Microsoft wants you to continue to talk to it and think of it as your conversational smart agent. They also want all the things that actually make Cortana smart to be in other products at Microsoft. So you're going to see Cortana integrated under the covers in a lot of places. And we've already seen that in Office. Microsoft's been adding Cortana to things like Skype. They're adding it to LinkedIn. They're adding it to Outlook, right? So that when you get a package, Cortana's tracking it for you if you want Cortana to do that. What's going to happen in Windows is going to be interesting, though, right? So if they take Cortana out of the search box and put it into the OS itself, that kind of begs the question, will Microsoft go so far as to say Windows is now an AI operating system? And you know what? I bet they're going to do it.
You know, you can't spell Windows without AI. Oh, wait.
I think we talked about this a little bit last week. We did.
The kind of semantics around Cortana and a misunderstanding of what Cortana is. I mean, in Windows 10, they made the explicit choice to put this very big and easy to see Cortana box, you know, right on the
tab. It confuses me because
me too.
The box says type here to search, and to the left of it is Cortana, and to the right of it is a microphone, and it says type here to search. Isn't that a little, I understand, this is confusing.
I think this feeds into what she's saying, is that people kind of misunderstand what Cortana is, and people who are worried that Cortana is heading for some kind of a defeat, I think misunderstand what part of all this is important to Microsoft and for their future. You know, you can today, if you hit the Windows key on your keyboard and you just start typing, this is how Windows search has worked since, Windows Vista? Windows 7? Yep. I don't remember exactly. You can also, you know, click into the Cortana box, like you said, but when you do, you actually get a Cortana user interface that comes up. The interesting thing that happens, though, is that if you actually just type, you see the same exact results that you would see if that search box wasn't even there. For that reason, I often just remove the search box because it's taking up space. And on a laptop in particular, it takes up way too much space. And I just don't have a need for it because I know I can always hit that button. But the ability to search, and typically what you're searching for is an application or maybe a document. You can also use it to search the web and I think the App Store now too. But I think most people are searching for it. I use it for secondary apps, you know. The apps I use the most often are on my taskbar. The apps I don't need so much are obviously in the start menu somewhere. Rather than go find them manually with the mouse, I just type in the first couple of letters, O-N-E for OneNote or whatever, and there it is. Moving Cortana to the Action Center or whatever doesn't change anything. I mean, it just doesn't change anything, I think, for most people. And I don't think it impacts, you know, Cortana either.
I think the people who are worried about this are people who think people talk to their PCs.
I do routinely talk at my PC.
Yeah, but not to Cortana.
That's not the same.
No, it's not the same. It's in fact a disorder. But
before the show, I said the hey, you know, who word. Because I have one of those Harman Kardon Invokes. Because I was going to talk to the Invoke, but the computer responded. And I was kind of surprised. That's how often I talk to it.
At night, these things fight each other for dominance. You know,
he's mine.
Which one gets to go first?
No, he's mine.
I'm closing him. He's touching me.
No, I think talking to the computer is overrated. I know people. Yeah. I dictate sometimes to mobile devices because I don't like the keyboards. Mm-hmm. But it's just when you're hands on the keyboard, why are you going to start talking to it?
Here's the right way to think. I think this ambient computing stuff is going to be a big deal in the home in the short term, right? And that today we use these little speakers. But those little speakers and microphones could be in light switches. They could be in
They'll be everywhere.
And the idea is that whatever system you're using, there'll be some hierarchy probably based on distance and some other mathematics. And one of them will respond and it will kind of come out to the appropriate speakers, however it works. There's nothing wrong with adding it to the computer in the sense that it becomes another node in this system. But like you said, the truth is you don't typically sit in front of the computer to talk to it. No. You know, that's not a normal thing. And just as the world has evolved where computers are used to do less, I don't know, consumption type tasks over time, we use tablets and phones and things instead, or we go out to our TV or whatever. I think this use also is infrequent on a PC.
Yeah.
So it's just the reality of the type of device it is and how we interact with it.
So the thing that's confusing, I think, to me and to I'm sure other people is Bing Search and Cortana somehow seem conflated.
They are.
Okay.
They absolutely are.
Because when you say Cortana to me, I think it's a search. It's a voice. It's a, you know, a voice interface to the computer. And when I think of Bing, I think of search. But they're...
Sorry.
Help me.
Microsoft needs to work on the branding part of it. But it's not just branding, right? It's also an understanding of what this thing is and where it is.
Yes,
and what the important bits are.
Because I think this is the way it is, kind of. They understand Cortana, it more deeply.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. But
so,
I mean,
people who write the software understand the integration. I'm just saying to the user who's only seen the surface, it's like, well, I don't understand what Bing has to do with Cortana.
The problem is they give names to things like, and I don't know the names of all these things, but like Cortana, whatever services, that is a cloud-based thing that's probably in Azure. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I feel like they need to be better about what's what. Because
programmers
as far as I'm concerned,
are all about namespaces.
Oh, but absolutely.
Users, we don't know the names. We don't know namespaces, you know?
So, by the way, that's a huge – that what you just touched on is something that's very core to what I do. We go back to when Windows Phone first came out, and I met with those guys the first time. I said, I'm writing a book. I need to know what things are called.
Right.
And they were like, we don't have names for this stuff. And like, no, you do have names for it. You have developers that are creating the system. They call it something.
They have names, yeah.
I need to know what those names are. And at the time, it wasn't available, so that was a mess. I guess what I'm suggesting here is that this stuff isn't as clean with the Cortana / AI / whatever stuff because they are calling these things the wrong things too. And I feel like this, and I think that's Mary Jo knows what I'm talking about. It's just a mess of names and ends and front end.
So, you know, it's really interesting to go back to the 2013 original reporting on this, because when Microsoft first described Cortana, the way they talked about it was an intelligent agent, but they admitted what was underneath was the Tell Me technology that they bought. That was the voice interface, right? So that you could talk to it.
I remember that.
And that goes back, by the way, that goes back to Windows Mobile days. I mean,
I know.
There was an app you could get for Windows Mobile that would allow you to talk to the phone.
Yep. And the other thing that was under it was this thing codenamed Satori. Satori was the knowledge-based repository that's inside Bing. So that's how the Bing thing got connected with the Cortana thing. But they also said, you know what, we're using machine learning technology. That piece just got lost, right? Everybody just thinks, oh, Cortana, it's like you're talking to Bing. Well, there's other smarts that are happening inside of Cortana, and that's what Microsoft wants to highlight going forward, right? They want you to think of this as being AI and not just a pretty front end to Bing. So,
which, by the way, makes sense because what you don't want is a Wikipedia result spoken to you.
Exactly.
You know, you want something smarter than that, and that's what the AI piece is.
Yep. And so some people are kind of throwing this idea around. I can't remember who did this first, but they said, you know, it would be interesting if they start calling Windows Redstone 5 or 6 an AI operating system. I could totally see them doing this because once you get the idea of Cortana being just a search thing away and you say now our entire Windows operating system is infused with intelligence, you could call it that. You could use those words.
The problem is, I mean...
I know.
Having Cortana in Windows doesn't make it smart. In fact, I think some of the applications of Cortana in Windows are dumb.
Right.
And I wonder what, how do we qualify that?
Right. If it's actually making use of machine learning on the back end, if it's getting smarter progressively based on your results and is starting to, quote, learn from you and starting to actually do things more intelligently, you could make that claim. And the reason I think Microsoft wants to make that claim is Windows is the only part of the business right now where they don't really have an AI pitch. Like in Office 365, you hear them talk about AI all the time.
Right.
You hear them talk about it with Azure. You hear them talk about it with their research group, right? But the part of Microsoft that doesn't really talk about AI besides just talking about Cortana is Windows. And if you look at Microsoft's stock price today, it's over $90. Why is it? Because the Wall Street analysts love Microsoft's story about AI and the cloud, and they don't care about Windows, right?
Do you think that attaching Windows to that train might diminish the AI message? That, in other words, they might not want Microsoft to promote that.
Maybe not, though. Because, you know, if you go back to last August when Microsoft's annual report came out, remember, a lot of people wrote this story. They're like, you know, Microsoft used to talk about themselves as a mobile-first, cloud-first company. And then last August in their annual report, they suddenly started talking about themselves as an intelligent cloud, intelligent edge, infused with AI company. off the tongue.
Aside from the AI bit, in many ways, intelligent edge is just saying the same thing. Like it is. It's cloud and devices. It's a different way of saying it. But that does speak, you know, there's something you see that's very interesting in the mobile world. Apple started it, and I think in part because they just don't have the big cloud-based infrastructure, say Google does. But they start talking about machine learning on the device, you know. Google talks about it, and I think what you're suggesting is that Microsoft should talk about it. In other words, you have all of this local processing power. Why wouldn't you use that? I mean, obviously, you have to hit cloud services when you're online to get more information, whatever it might be. But if you're in an offline situation or in a slow network or whatever, it shouldn't even matter. Your computer is so powerful and so underused. Promoting that on the PC, I do think would make sense.
Yep. And remember, they said the next version of HoloLens is going to have that processing power for AI at the chip level in the HoloLens, right? So they are talking about it too, right?
They should call it a neural processor. Did anyone
maybe
steal that?
They will. Yeah. So I think the whole AI story from them, we talked about it a little bit when we were doing the preview of trends for this year, but trust me, everything you hear out of Microsoft in 2018 is going to have an AI angle. Already this year, we've heard so many stories from them about this. You know, we now have the best machine reading comprehension. It's thanks to our AI technology, right? Everything is going to get the AI spin. Like last year, I feel like the spin was digital transformation. This year, it's going to be AI everything. AI, all the things. That's going to be what they do.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, Surface Pro, and I think Surface Book 2 might have this too. I don't remember them promoting it, but, you know, they have that special digitizer in the screen that makes it better for handwriting, right? So any Surface device works fine with a Surface Pen, the new version, but if you have this newer device and the pen, it works better. And that's not necessarily AI, but you could picture them having custom chips or chipsets for those purposes as well. And that would be an interesting way to differentiate a Microsoft device from, you know, an HP device or a Dell or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, me too. The other technology that we don't really talk about that much when we do this show, but I think is going to be huge for them when we talk about AI, is all the stuff they're doing around cognitive services. And so if you know what that is at Microsoft, cognitive services are all these APIs that they've been building out that they want developers to use to add to their applications, right? So there's a Bing web search API, there's a text analytics API, a face API, computer vision API. All of these things sit in Azure. They run on Azure on the back end. And all of these things are going to be connected to what you hear from them across all the product lines. So there's going to be some things with Cortana that derive from some of this stuff or at least work with it. I bet we're going to hear more from LinkedIn about using this. I think we're going to hear more about Office using these different APIs. So that's another theme to watch for this year when you think about what's Microsoft doing with AI. It's not sexy, but it's big.
It's IBM sexy. I mean, I think the big win here is when some third party and major third party can be touted as a win, you know, for that thing. In other words, Cortana or cognitive services or whatever they're calling it, you know, if Facebook were to start using it for some reason, or we talked a few weeks ago, I think, about this notion that the future of gaming is streaming from data centers. Microsoft is uniquely poised to do that. Wouldn't it be interesting if Nintendo or Sony or some other competitor today became a partner, because they needed to use those services to get their own thing up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's a capability that Microsoft has that those guys just kind of don't today.
Yeah. If you go to their cognitive services page on the web, they do tout Uber as one of the big users. But the other ones are kind of like, oh, okay, you know, Blue Cup, Gray Meta, whoever these guys are, right?
But Uber has the cute little cars. That's a great example. Yeah. I think everyone enjoys that. Look at the little car.
I know. Right. So, I agree with you. They need more big name converts to using cognitive services. But that's kind of stuff, you know, it's stuff we don't talk about a lot on Windows Weekly, but this is the stuff that is kind of making the Microsoft wheel go round at this point. And this is where they're putting all their, like, they have 5,000 people.
They need partners. I wrote an editorial this morning about Netflix and how terrible it is. And the reason Netflix is terrible is that it's not smart. And so if you think about something like, I watch a show, we watch it through to completion, we loved it. It doesn't matter if we loved it. We watched every episode. As far as Netflix is concerned, we liked it. It should then pop up a bunch of things that are related to that show, which it does, but it doesn't leave out the ones we've already watched. In most cases now, the first five choices are shows we've already seen. That's dumb. That's 1990s dumb. That's a simple SQL database query would fix that problem. Mm-hmm. You know, Microsoft, with their AI machine learning, you know, magic or whatever, could do wonders for a company like Netflix, you know? And the applications of this thing are almost infinite. And I have to assume that Microsoft, given their history, is looking for this kind of partnership. But there are many, many examples of where they could help out. And I think that is the non-sexy future you were referring to, you know, the IBM-esque future is Microsoft on the back end.
Yeah.
Not Microsoft, you know, using some Microsoft device or some Microsoft app or whatever. I think the real future here and the volume here is going to be the back-end service stuff.
Me too. And I think at Build, whenever Build is this year, April, May, we're probably in Seattle. I bet this is going to be a huge track. I mean, remember 2 years ago, they talked a lot about bots and conversation as a service. And last year, they didn't really talk about that at all at Build. Just maybe a passing reference. But I bet this year that whole push is going to be back again and probably more on the cognitive services side. And here's how developers can make their apps AI aware, smarter, working with the Microsoft Cloud.
It's the same thing. If you want to order a pizza or whatever, and for some reason you want to speak that command to the ether, you're not going to boot up Skype and start interacting with Pizza Hut, you know?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that Microsoft can't play a role in that transaction, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think this, you know, again, we deal, Mary Jo and I, with a lot of enthusiasts. And I think the defeatist sense that you get is from these people who only see the devices and the front end stuff. And this is what they care about. And I'm one of those guys. I mean, I completely understand it. but no, I mean, I feel that pain. But I mean, the world went in the way it went. So you have to kind of work within the confines of that and give Microsoft some credit for doing it. And I think they have a really rich future in, and it's weird, it's just such a, it sounds so secondary, but it's so important to play the supporting role in the front end services and devices that people will actually use.
That's where the money is, as we always talk about the enterprise, right? It's like, you would love to see them in more speakers and washing machines and cars, but where's the real money? It's in the cloud, right? And that's if they can get a toehold there with people using Azure on the back end, Azure Bot Service, any kind of Azure machine learning services, and tie other front ends to it. I don't think Microsoft cares anymore if that's the way it goes. As long as they get the money somewhere in the transaction, I think that's
what
they
care. And by the way, since we're still early days and there are already 1,000 of these services, maybe it's time for a little rebranding effort. You know, let's think about renaming these things in ways that make sense. And making it a little more cohesive. It's hard, you know, just to keep track
of what's
what.
To track it, right? I know.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just
it seems like the names are all over the map.
They are. And for a while, like we said last week, they were adding the word Cortana to everything, right? It was Cortana Machine Learning Suite, and it had nothing to do with Cortana, really, you know? And I think they're stepping back from that cliff like they did when they added .NET to everything. They're kind of backing away from that.
Or Windows to everything,
which is good. The brand is Microsoft.
And they've learned that in some ways that we've kind of learned it on the client a little bit. Surface devices now come with a Microsoft logo.
Microsoft 365.
Surface, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I this is the brand that's going to make sense. You know, Microsoft is a great brand, very well respected. You know, the leadership of the company is very well respected, et cetera, et cetera. If you're a big company looking to do whatever it is and you want to partner with some technology company in this space, Microsoft becomes an obvious choice. Nobody knows what Cortana, cognitive, blah, 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 what is. But if you say it's Microsoft AI something, you're like, oh, yeah, that's what we want. Obviously, that's what we want.
Yep.
What do we want?
When do we want it?
When do we want it? Now.
Cognitive toolkit.
2013. But since we can't have that, we'll take this.
Yeah. And we're making great strides. And someday, when you married Cortana, you'll know it's happening. It's here.
You guys want to hear a quote from 2013? I'm just kind of obsessed going back and looking at this, right? This is from Steve Ballmer. And he was talking about adding Cortana to the shell, to the Windows shell. And they hadn't actually divulged the name Cortana yet. But he said, our UI will be deeply personalized based on the advanced, almost magical intelligence in our cloud that learns more and more over time about people and the world. That's what they did, right? In the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. The implementation is so ham-handed in a way, right? You know, Cortana, I mean, it kind of has to be. The notion of technology that learns about you sounds wonderful, and it's like Blade Runner or something. Yeah. But the truth is, does Cortana really learn anything about me? Not really. I mean,
I give it information. The notebook.
Right. But what that's me teaching it, not it learning. I mean, it's not like it's this thing sitting on my shoulder watching what I'm doing, which I think is how a lot of people imagine it would be.
Yeah. Although, I told you guys, when I entered one time just to test it, a reminder in my phone, and I'm like, next time I go to Fairway, tell me to buy milk. And I'm just like, yeah. Then one day I walk into Fairway, and I happen to look at my phone, and it says on it, buy milk.
Nice.
So you're like, okay, that feels magical.
Yeah, but you know what?
Right?
That's good. But what magical is when my wife and I have a conversation about a certain topic, and then I turn on my computer and I get an ad for that thing. That's Google. So I hear you, but I mean, that Blade Runner thing that I was talking about is happening. It's just not happening at Microsoft. You know, like, I mean, there's some really creepy stuff that happens with Google, and that's how you know it's effective. Like, the creepier it is, you know, the more invasive it is. In some ways, you know, the more capable it is.
You know, if we ever get general AI, don't you think it'll be massively creepy?
Yes. Oh, it has to be. It has to be.
It'll
be like, hey, Paul, you haven't hugged your wife in a few hours. Maybe you want
to. But all you have to do is dig deep into what creepy means and what biologically creepy is. It's this very valuable biological symptom that something's not right. That something is trying to be human that's not, and that's what general AI will be. I guess if it's really good, it won't be creepy but there'll be an uncanny valley for some time.
There has to be. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There always is. We've all had these.
We might be in it. I mean, this is we're kind of in it, except that it's so dumb. Actually, there's probably an analog to how computer generated graphics. So in the early days of computer-generated graphics, you didn't attempt to make it look real because you just couldn't. And it wasn't creepy because, well, it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Right.
And then,
but now they actually make them weird just so you know it's fake because it gets too...
You can make it real. I mean, so real that you miss it. I mean, a lot of people missed the CGI in Star Wars.
Yep.
I won't say anything, but there were, not this year's movie, but a couple of years back, there were two characters that were fake.
Oh, well.
I'm not talking Jar Jar
Binks. We're not talking Jar Jar Binks characters.
Humanoid characters. And if you knew what to look for, it was still slightly creepy. But if you didn't know what to look for, you would just go right by it.
Yep.
So I think we're getting there.
I mean, some of the invasive creepiness, though, is there already. I think I remember telling you guys this, too, when I first got a Windows phone. And, you know, if you repeatedly go back to a place, it assumes it's your home, you know. So one day I was at Rattle and Hum, of course, and
welcome home.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
I think it was Windows Phone, this would have been Bing or Cortana, whatever. One day I went to map myself home, and it mapped me to a bar in Walcott Square in Hyde Park, which I've never actually been inside of. I've been by it. I used to go to the Dunkin' Donuts next to it occasionally.
Oh, I was confused.
I had to look it up because I was like, what is this thing? And, yeah, you know, I looked it up on the map and I was like, what?
You go you know, there a lot, Paul.
Yeah, I just blacked out. I don't know. But,
well, but, and this is a funny discussion going on in chat because what happens is it's just computer algorithms right up to the point where it's not. Or it doesn't seem to be, but it is. And so AI up to the point where it starts getting, you know, realistic, just looks like a computer program and a dumb one right now at that. It's Siri and Cortana and Google and Amazon are just, you know, they're kind of dopey, purely kind of bad simulations of humans, but they're getting better.
Yep.
And there will be an inflection point where they'll where it'll just be, I can't tell.
It's also going to happen pretty damn quick. That's the thing.
Well, that's
you know,
the
Microsoft,
question. Who knows,
when they talk about early applications of AI, we'll point back to even very simple things like spell checking in Microsoft Word in 1993 or whatever. And, you know, you kind of look back at that and you're like, okay, I could kind of see that. Of course, the way it was implemented at the time was just a table of words. It was the simplest thing in the world. But, but of course, you watched Word improve over the years where they got the little squiggles under things and started looking at grammar. Started making recommendations for, you know, simplifying your speech or whatever.
I think it'll be imperceptible when it happens. I think we will gradually ease into it. And 20 or 30 or 40 years from now.
You think it's that much time?
I
don't know.
I don't know. No one knows. I don't know.
No.
It's hard to tell.
Sure.
Technology happens simultaneously, takes faster than you think and longer than you think, right? You know,
and I mean, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say some of the things that seemed like they were impossible and so far away aren't even that far away. In December, Microsoft said pretty soon, I mean, they didn't give us a date, but it's on their roadmap. Now, Cortana is going to be able to sort emails and give you summaries of the most important ones, not just from Outlook, but from Gmail and other accounts, too. So that's one of those technologies.
But Google does that in Gmail
what is that?
Now,
what
but
are we
it's
talking
not
about?
Cortana.
Is that focused inbox 2.0? Microsoft is going to decide what's most important to you. And then, and how can you rely on that, right? How can you possibly rely on that?
But if I don't know, just some of those things that seemed like, if you told us that 5 years ago, wouldn't that seem outlandish just five years ago?
Yeah. I think, you know, things like self-driving cars are going to happen a lot quicker than I think most people are ready for. That said, we're not going to have flying cars anytime soon. And when I was a kid, I assumed when I was an adult, I'd be flying around in a, you know, a Jetsons car or something.
Yeah.
It's just, that's why it's unpredictable. You just don't, you don't.
It's true. You don't really know how long.
It may happen tomorrow.
Like those Microsoft envisioning videos they used to do, you know, where they showed you their view of the future. Right. And, some of those things actually happened. Some of them still haven't happened. And
it
that
could
was
also
like,
be just a, it's like cancer research or any medical thing. There'll be some breakthrough tomorrow or 2 years from now. We don't know.
Right.
In quantum computing or in whatever.
True.
And suddenly this whole new world is going to open up. But to bring it back home, I guess, in a way, I mean, Microsoft is one of the few companies, and we're literally talking single hand digit and whatever number of companies that can play a role in this future. You know, it really is one of the only ones. There aren't that many.
The one thing we don't really know, but we think to be true, is that your dog is not real.
I'm still waiting on the doors for the room here.
The one thing we know is what's going on in China. And everybody I talk to says, we ain't got nothing on compared to what Chinese researchers have. So we may be surprised that AI may not speak English. You know, we just assume.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, it's going to speak English. Yep. It may not be Cortana. It may not be something that speaks English. It may speak Chinese. I wouldn't be, frankly, I wouldn't be at all surprised. That's kind of my expectation, is that whatever is going to happen is going to happen first in China.
I know. Qi Lu is at Baidu, right?
You know why Qi Lu is
back? I don't
want to
get off on a political thing, but I think part of it has to do with just the basic value system there, too. I think they, by and large, would just be more aggressive about this kind of stuff just because of the nature of the country.
Totally agree.
And
it's kind of, they don't have to get consensus about.
That's what I mean. In other words, they're not going to have the same moral concerns that we might have about privacy and whatever.
Look at stem cell research in the U.S. It's stymied by the, and I don't.
Well, by politics.
I think this is a good thing that we are. That's what a democracy does. It chews on this stuff, but it slows you down in some respects. When you have an authoritarian regime that can make a decision, let's make it.
That's why Apple's so great. I mean, the Google thing works.
There are structural disadvantages too. I mean, there's all sorts of problems both ways. But I'm just, I think that what I've heard about, and there's other cultural reasons why the Chinese language, for instance, has been a real hurdle in computing. And so they've had to handle it. They've had to get smarter about it. It's easier to speak than type. There's all sorts of reasons why they might be working on it harder than we are. I find this fascinating. I hope it happens before I'm dead, but I'm not convinced it will. I mean, it would have to happen the next 30 years for me to have a shot at it. And I don't know. I think it's more 40 or 50. I really do. But we'll see. I mean, before you get like C-3PO, right?
Yeah.
Before you get a robot you can converse with. Or a monolith you can converse with.
A true personal assistant.
I mean, the notion of someone walking around their house kind of having an ongoing conversation isn't far-fetched, but I agree it's not going to happen in 2019 or whatever. I mean, you can picture it. Yeah, I mean, the pieces are there where you can say, like, this is going to happen.
Yeah. Punter Joe says, it'll happen just before we all die. he may have something there.
But so lonely. I'm here. Then I die.
Thank you, humans. We're done with you now. Goodbye. Yep. Let's take a break. You know what? I think you could make an argument that it is the next step in evolution. That it is, in fact, an evolutionary step, then maybe we are, the Neanderthals of the Earth.
Some of us definitely are. I mean, and my neighbors can attest to my scratching.
Yeah.
Who's the ape in the sun around this ball?
All right, let's take a little break, come back. We've got Windows 10 news, cloud news, and Xbox news. And I'm so glad. When my kids,
I wasn't going to add it, but Mary Jo mentioned it. Now I got to
come on.
When my kid, I see MJF's initials next to it, that's weird. When my kid stole my Elite controller, I almost went out and bought a new one. Now I'm glad I didn't.
Although,
that's a tease. Just leave it. Just leave it. Let it lie, Paul. Let it lie. Just sit there like a fish. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage. I love this. This is from Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country. If you look at customer satisfaction, number two in total loans, but they're pretty close. And the number one lender in the country is that big bank you really do not want to deal with. Who wants to put on a suit and tie and go to the bank and beg, please, sir, could I have a loan? And then, I mean, it really is Dickensian. They pull out sheafs of paper and they look up loan rates, and then they have a special calculator, a little HP calculator that does loan amortization tables in the calculator. This was my experience 4 years ago when I went to that big bank. Fast forward to the 21st century and Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans has created a lending product that is just right for the technologically savvy like you. You can do everything. You don't have to go to a bank. You don't have to go to the basement or the attic to get paperwork. You can do it all online. In fact, you can do it all on your phone. It's that easy. In fact, it's so fast, you can do it all on your phone at the open house and say, we're approved before you leave. Check it out, rocketmortgage.com/windows. The Quicken Loans realized that the mortgage experience wasn't, to put it gently, keeping up with the times. Dated, not client-focused. It needed a technological revolution. So they created Rocket Mortgage. You go there, you answer a few simple questions. In fact, go there right now and set up the account so that if you do decide to buy, or by the way, refi, and now might be a very good time to refi, rates are not going down. I think they're clearly going up. They've already gone up a little bit. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Create the account. You can give it the basic information without saying, okay, I want to apply for a loan, just so you can see how it works, and you'll be ready. You probably will not need to look at anything. You will know the answers to the questions they ask. Then, because of their trusted relationships with all the financial institutions, they'll say, okay, good. Is this your bank account? We're going to take a look at this. Is that okay with you? Yes. They crunch the numbers based on income, assets, and credit. They will line up all the loans for which you qualify. You choose the rate. You choose the term. You choose the down payment. Find the one that's just right for you, and then mortgage with confidence. It's that easy. Apply simply, understand fully, then mortgage confidently at Rocket Mortgage. I want you to go to rocketmortgage.com/windows right now. Set up the account, or at least bookmark it. Why not set up the account? That way you're ready. And if you do go to an open house on Sunday and you go, oh, you can say, pull the trigger, honey. Let's do it. And show the realtor. We're approved. I can tell you right now, I've been buying houses since I was a young man. It puts you right at the front of the line. You don't want to be the people who say, oh, we love this house. We're going to make an offer, but we're going to go home and apply for a loan. That's the people who don't get the house. Rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. I got that advice early on when we were first home shopping, is get pre-approved and get that letter, because it makes it so much easier to buy, and the sellers love it. I only got beat once, and that was by somebody offering all cash. If you're not offering all cash, rocketmortgage.com/windows, and we thank them for their support. rocketmortgage.com/windows. Actually, don't go to Winders.
Don't go to Winders.
I don't think that works. Totally different ad. Winders. Winders Weekly. Continuing on. There is no Meltdown Inspector in this entire show. But,
well, actually, that's not technically true. We have a little bit at the end. But,
okay, we'll get there. Yeah. But presumably, you all have updated. Good news. And does that mean everybody now is... Because I think the updates... Steve was saying this yesterday. If you're not on the Fall Creators update, the updates may not be there yet for you, right? And on older versions of Windows, they may not be there for you.
Oh, that's probably true. So, although we just had the mainstream versions of Windows 10 were updated today. I wonder...
Well, get the you want 1709, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say
so. If you can. Yeah, if you can get it. Remember, with the last version of Windows 10, Redstone 3, no, 2, not everybody could get it.
It's almost everybody now, though, right? Almost
everybody.
They said 80 or 90% so, or something. Like
everyone has it, obviously.
Everybody.
That's what that means.
Right.
Well, if you
fully
don't,
deployed
there's a reason.
Fully available / fully deployed doesn't mean everybody has it.
Oh, what does that mean?
What does the word fully mean? I'm confused.
I know.
Yeah. I'm not a writer or anything, but what definition is Microsoft using?
So what they're saying is it's fully available to everyone, which means even businesses now should feel confident in getting the update and going and proactively getting it if you don't have it already. But it doesn't necessarily mean every single device has it.
Yeah. Is that because the end user hasn't done it, or because Microsoft's still not offering it?
Right. So I asked them that, and they said, if you don't have it and you think your machine is eligible, you should go check manually for it. And if you don't see it still, go use the... media.
Really?
What's it called? Mm-hmm.
They're saying
media
creation tool.
They're saying do it by hand?
They're just saying
If you Google search for download Windows 10, the first link should be the Microsoft website, where they do have a download of you can download the tool like she's saying, or the ISO or whatever. And upgrade that way.
Right. Oh, wow. Because I've been telling people, if Microsoft doesn't offer it to you,
I know.
That is the normal advice.
If it don't fit, don't force it.
That's right.
Yeah.
As they say.
Yes. Right. But now they're saying you should go look for it if you don't have it yet. And if you still can't get it, it means there's some reason you can't get it.
So they'll
there's
block
a driver.
It if, yeah, they are pushing out AMDs now. But let's say, as an example, you have a chip that's not compatible. They'll block it, right? They won't.
I believe they will.
It won't install.
That's right.
That's why the force it issue, right? If you haven't been offered it and you go out and get the Windows Media Creation Tool and download
FCU... Let's qualify that. If you have a microprocessor that's not supported, yes, it will block it. If you have a driver that is the reason you didn't get it, you're still going to install it. That's not going to prevent that from happening.
Mm. Oh, really? Is that true? Because I thought I had a problem with that on my old Acer S7. I had some.
No. I mean, if you go to get the media creation tool or the ISO and you try to upgrade that way. And the reason you weren't getting it automatically from Windows Update is because of a driver, like your Wi-Fi card or whatever. You will successfully install the operating system, and your Wi-Fi card may or may not work.
And you'll be
if you have
sorry.
An unsupported processor, which is the case, right? In some older Atoms or whatever, That installer will block it. It won't allow you to install it.
You do want the Fall Creators update, because the update for PCs with the Fall Creators update is better.
Yes, right.
The Meltdown.
Newer is always better.
But the Spectre Melt. I think Steve said this yesterday. You'll get the better mitigation. The one that hits performance less if you have a more up-to-date
That's
computer.
True. And it's especially true if you're on newer hardware, right? Well, the best combination of things, and the industry is seriously celebrating this, is the very latest version of Windows running on the very newest hardware platforms. Perfect.
Right. Yeah. Well, you still get some hit, but not as bad.
Better.
Right. Yeah.
But it's better than the older versions.
Much better in some cases.
Right. Yep. So if you're a business and you've been waiting to get the green light, they gave you the green light. This is usually it's like 4 months after.
I'm sure there are businesses waiting for that green light to happen.
You know what? There are actually.
Microsoft says it's okay to upgrade. That's great.
It's like, okay, 4 months of guinea pig testing has happened with the home users and everything seems okay now. So now if you're a business, you should feel good about it. And if you want the actual media for 1709, they're saying next week, January 22nd, it'll be on Windows Update for Business, WSUS, and the Volume Licensing Service Center.
Really?
Yep.
You know, today's PCs are better than ever. Time to upgrade to a fresh...
In a world
where PCs go to die. I wish... Here's my wish for the world. I wish everybody could afford a brand new PC.
Yeah.
Me too.
But they can't.
I can't, so have fun with what you have.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, the good news, if there is any, is that so far there's been no exploit in the wild. Nobody's figured out how to actually do this for reals.
I mean, aside from the obvious, it's only a matter of time type talk. I sometimes wonder with this stuff if the move is going to be more against cloud systems, and because it's going to be so lucrative.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of imperative for them to do it and buy new PCs if they have to, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm not saying that's going to protect us as individuals with PCs, but it the way the world has gone, we're not necessarily the most lucrative targets anymore. So hooray.
Yeah. And if you're, if you're a target of the NSA,
right,
then you might also want to upgrade.
If you are a target of the NSA. So here's some advice for listeners of this podcast. If you are a target of the NSA, probably a Mac user, be on the lookout for hacking.
I think we're, I just bought that ridiculously expensive iMac Pro.
Yeah.
And I'm praying that, and it's fully fixed as far as I can tell, though nobody has written what Steve has written for Windows to check.
That's right. That's right. But has space gray accessories on eBay yet?
I'm not using them. Should I? Is there big money to be made in space gray?
There is big money to be made. Yeah.
Because I'm not using them. I don't
it's
like wireless.
This week's version of the Kinect adapter for the Xbox One S. It's the limited really supply, and they're going for big bucks.
Really? Wow. Wait a minute. Let me check. eBay, Apple, steel, gray, keyboard, and a mouse. Yeah. Because if it's, what is it? $5? $100? What is the?
I mean, the keyboard itself would normally probably cost $100 if you could buy it. Right. I bet it's a lot more than that.
I wonder if anybody wants a black USB cable, lightning cable, because I got one of them too.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see any listings, but I'll...
It looks nice with your U2 iPod.
I have one of those, too. I gave it to my sister for her birthday. Yeah, it had all the U2 music on it. Yeah.
It probably still has the old connector, too, the wide one, I bet.
Somebody's saying the mouse is going on eBay for $325.
Jeez. Yeah,
I'm literally not using it. It's a terrible mouse. I don't like it.
I know, but it looks awesome.
Well, now I want to keep it. Now that I know.
Well, eventually Apple's going to sell them from their online store or whatever, so they won't be exclusive anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Hmm.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail that.
Yeah, you did. I'm thinking.
Like Paul's
thinking.
Bargain of the week. or I guess yeah. ripoff of
Bargain of the Week tip.
Redstone 3.
Right. Sell your old tech.
That's the Fall Creators Update, aka Redstone 3, aka 1709, was the fastest to reach 100 million devices ever in the history.
When exactly did that happen, Mary Jo? Please.
I don't know. Do you know?
Nobody knows.
Nobody
knows. That's the other thing. It's like there are 600 million people using Windows 10.
Wow.
And they said that this release was the fastest to hit 100 million. But we know that roughly 50% of all Windows 10 users are on this release. So there are at least 300 million people using it probably, right? Rough math.
So you know why they gave you that stat, right? I mean, you were a little brain addled. You had just come out of CES. You were having trouble digesting the blog post, as I recall.
Yes, we had words. Yep.
But the reason they told us that is because, as we've insisted on the show a few times, things are going well, right? And they're pushing it to more people and having fewer problems than previous releases. So they're trying to say that.
That's a fact. Yeah. And they said it poorly. By the way, this is it's a paradox of a sort. I mean, I still feel very strongly that Windows as a service is done poorly and is a mistake and is moving too quickly and yada, yada, yada. But the fact remains, you know, the last two releases, they shipped last year, both went very successfully. And the Creators Update, the one that came out in March or April or whatever, they specifically went pretty slow with that release because of what had happened with the previous one. But they didn't do that with this version at all. It's been deployed very quickly. So
and when they actually released it with the green light to businesses, it had only been 3 months instead
versus
of four.
What, five wow. or four. Okay,
four,
yeah.
four to
yeah,
five.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I you can't argue with the facts of this situation. I mean, it's been going good.
Nevertheless, the industry marks six straight years of PC sales decline.
Yeah. Well, it's not Windows 10's fault necessarily.
Maybe they're related. Everybody's upgrading.
By the way, it is perhaps coincidental, but I don't believe it is, that the start of this decline was literally the quarter in which Windows 8 was released. the good news from the perspective of the industry, well, I guess it's twofold. One is that the falling sales have slowed dramatically. If you look at the sales number from 2017 versus 2016, it's a very small drop. There were some bad years there, but the drop's getting smaller and smaller. And we're hoping for a plateau of some kind, or some kind of roughly plateau-like situation going forward. Mm-hmm. But the other good news is that, you know, the PC market has responded to this. Because remember, PC sales since 2011 literally have fallen 30%. I mean, they've almost lost a third of their annual unit sales volume. They've responded, I think, in smart ways. I mean, from the perspective of just PCs, you know, companies like Lenovo, HP, Dell, and others are going after these kind of sub-markets that are profitable, gaming PCs, premium PCs, that kind of thing. And they're also diversifying into other products. We saw a bunch of that stuff at CES, where a lot of PC makers are releasing different device types, smart speakers, and you know, different things that are not, we wouldn't call PCs, you know, they're diversifying or becoming more than just PC makers. And then, of course, there's consolidation too. And I don't think there was anything dramatic this past year, but there's still talk around companies that aren't a big deal in the United States, like Toshiba and Fujitsu. And I think we're going to see further consolidation as well. And that, you know, that makes sense given that it's a smaller market and so forth, but not a complete nightmare, but obviously, sales growth would be better. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But they're making it up with volume. No, wait, no, they're not. I don't know.
Okay.
It's getting there.
Yeah. You want to do new fonts page?
What about the new fonts page,
guys? What about
guys?
The new fonts page? Is this in, Redstone 3 or?
Well,
is this in
Not technically in anything. It's hidden in Redstone 4. It's not a feature that they've exposed, but two things going on here. One, we've spoken about this a bit. This is the first release of Windows 10 where they have not announced, here's what we're doing. You know, so there hasn't been an event like a reviewer's workshop or something. It's the first time they haven't done it. And I'd like to see something along those lines. I think we're getting down to the wire. We've got to be a month or so away from the feature set finalizing. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't see any place for it. I mean, but whatever. Okay, so this is what they're doing. It's different. Everything's different this time, I guess. The other one is that, maybe tied to this, a lot of the stuff that we're uncovering inside of the builds may not necessarily happen, right? They never announced it anyway. I mean, so a lot of Windows enthusiasts, and I think Windows users too, have been calling on Microsoft to further get rid of the control panel, which is that legacy user interface, and get all that stuff into settings. And we really do see that in RS4. It is really transforming into a very, what I would call a command dense user interface. It used to be like this Play School looking thing with five big buttons, and there were a couple of options in there. And now it's got multiple panes and lots of options, and there's a lot of information in those windows. And they're taking on some more complex UIs. And so, not that font management is necessarily a complex UI, but it's a little more, again, command dense than a lot of settings UIs. And it's could be happening in RS4. It's not something that they've announced, but Raphael found it in the most recent build. And I think it was Raphael, right?
Yeah, it was Raphael.
Yep. Raphael, yeah. And it looks a lot like the control panel UI. And I had sort of... I don't remember, a couple of builds ago, shots leaked of what the settings UI was going to look like. And it looks to me a lot like the control panel. Like they've reached that point where this Play School thing has become kind of professional looking. So I posted a picture of control panel from Windows 95 on Twitter. And I said, here's the new settings UI uncovered, you know, cause it almost looks exactly like it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they get there.
This is why everybody on Twitter hates Paul Theriot.
It's one of the reasons.
Because you just don't know what you're seeing when you're looking at his Twitter feed.
There was a TV show called Everyone Hates Chris, I think was the name of it. And so they should have one called Everyone Hates Paul on Twitter.
No.
Don't give Theriot anybody an idea. Somebody will do it.
Yep. It'd be hilarious.
Actually, your Twitter feed is rich with images. It's a very...
It is rich.
Lovely, lovely feed.
That was you just went by one of my best tweets. I got to someday compile my best tweets, but it is.
Which one?
Something along the lines of, if you fall asleep while meditating, does that mean you're really good at it or really bad at it?
Meditate on that for a while. Think about that. I don't know. Do you want to move on to Skype, or do you have other things from this? I guess we're getting to Redstone 4.
I would love
4,
to move past
right?
Skype if we could.
Yeah.
17.
No, we should talk about the build. Yeah. The new build that came out.
Is out. Yeah.
1709. No, wait. 17074.
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't a big one, right? I mean, a couple smaller things in there.
I think we've seen the Big Bang release already. I think that is part of it. But, more fine tuning. I mean,
lots
I kinda
of
like,
edge stuff, right?
Yeah. Including quiet one hours. Of my biggest pet peeves, which is like a very small thing. And I feel weird even trying to explain what this is because I think most people will not understand what I'm talking about. But if you use the favorites bar in Edge or in any web browser is like the taskbar in Windows, right? It's you either use it or you don't, And what I mean by that is I use the taskbar pretty exclusively. I pin all the apps I actually use there. And that's what I use to launch apps. I don't go into the start menu, like I said, unless I need an app I only use very occasionally. So I do the same thing with bookmarks in Edge or favorites or whatever, or in any other browser. I use the bookmarks bar. In other web browsers, because they're just more mature, on an individual icon basis, you could give that thing a name. You could change the name. You could get rid of the name. It could just be the icon. And Edge didn't support this. Edge today doesn't support this. So in Edge, every one of those things has to have a name. You can change the name, but it has to have a name, at least one letter. You can't leave it without a name unless you want to leave all of them without a name, in which case you get these indiscernible icons, and that's all it is. So in this release of Windows 10, they're adding the ability to, on an icon by icon, I should say like a favorite by favorite basis, determine whether that thing is an icon with a name, which you can define, or just the icon. You can do it discreetly to each one. That's exactly how I use this thing on other browsers. So it's one of 117 things that has kept me from using Edge. It doesn't get me that much closer, but they have eliminated one of the problems I have with it.
Nice.
Does anyone understand what I'm talking about?
I'm actually,
I can't believe you care, but I understand.
I'm transfixed by your font choices. That's not your computer, no, I presume. Because I don't think you use Opera as your browser.
No, that's Raphael's computer, and he does use Opera, yes.
That's his go-to browser? That's crazy.
Look, the way I say this is nobody's perfect.
That's crazy talk.
He's using like a diversified ecosystem.
Oh. No, I suspect what he would say is that it's the Google rendering engine without any of the Google invasions. Mm.
It's biodiversity in action.
Yes. Yes. Oh, and by the way, for all you server insiders who listen to the show.
Ooh.
Crickets.
Okay. Why didn't you look at me like I was going to say something? Just like waited for me to say something.
Yesterday, yes. Microsoft also rolled out an insider preview of 17074 for server. So we don't know a whole lot about what's in the coming Redstone 4 equivalent of server. But we do see them making some progress on Storage Spaces Direct, which got pulled from the Redstone 3 version because it wasn't up to quality standards. But they're still tweaking this, and they're adding support for new kinds of hardware. And it looks like maybe this is going to make it back in with the coming version if you're a Storage Spaces Direct fan.
Mary Jo is so patient.
several years of withstanding this has made her immune.
I'm just like, okay, he can make all the faces he wants. I know there are people who care.
Okay.
Look at you in the font thing. Come on.
Yeah, if really, that's not Paul. More obscure, really, Paul. Dude. I'm just saying. Algerian, really? All right. actually, those are just alphabetically what shows up. We're all stuck with those weird fonts, I think.
Yep.
Skype is getting signal based, which is good, end to end encryption. Yep. Now, I thought Skype was always encrypted, but it was always Microsoft proprietary, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of people, including many of my readers, are like, it's already encrypted. It's got 256-bit AES encryption. That's what they said. Look it up. And I'm like, yeah, but it was never end-to-end encrypted, right?
Right.
That was the difference.
What does that mean? Microsoft could read it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who could read it, but...
somebody could read it.
All right. The government. I don't know.
Signal is good. Signal is really good. And my suspicion is that Microsoft had it on their servers unencrypted, or in some form it was stored unencrypted. So
yeah.
It was encrypted in transit, but not
at rest. Right.
Yeah.
So now if you're a Skype insider, you can start testing this. And they haven't said when it'll go out to everyone, but at least it's in progress now. And it's coming. You can test it if you're on Skype for iOS, Android, Linux, Mac, or Windows desktop. The only thing you can't test it yet on is UWP, which is kind of my run. Yeah. Right.
Will it be in UWP Skype eventually?
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
The other thing, it's two things about it. I believe this is only for conversations with a single person. I think it's like a one-to-one kind
of
thing.
For now, right? Yep.
So it's not the default. You have to enable it.
Yeah, you do have to, and that was the other thing. You have to manually enable it.
You have to say, I want an incognito conversation.
Yeah, every one of your conversations should be like that. I suspect that will change to the default as they figure out how it works.
Google did the same thing with Allo. I don't know if you remember. And they got a lot of heat for it. It had strong encryption, but only if you asked for it.
Only one-to-one. Only if you asked for it. Yeah. And I think it was for the same reason. I think it had something to do with... I think it was because it had to be with just one person, I think.
Oh, maybe.
Originally.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know why.
Okay. Interesting. Anyway, it's good. I'm glad we have it.
Yeah.
I remember...
Yeah, overdue, but yeah, good that they're doing it.
The former world chess champion, Garry Kasparov, who was a very outspoken critic of Putin, used Skype primarily for communication because he felt like it was secure, but he'll be happier now, I think.
Well, he's particularly happy to discover that those years of conversations might have been hacked.
Yeah, or they're on Microsoft servers just waiting to be hacked.
Yeah.
OneDrive for Business has a new feature.
Guys, this is another one. You better not do the crickets again.
This one's important, but we need to qualify a few things, but
Okay. So let me give the broad intro first, and then you can do your thing.
Yep.
OneDrive for Business is getting a feature called Files Restore, which we've been hearing them tease since Ignite last year. And so what this is if your files or folders get corrupted or attacked maliciously, you're going to be able to go back in time and restore them, I believe up to 30 days back and restore them. So far, we think this is only a feature for OneDrive for Business. I don't think they've said it's coming to OneDrive Consumer. And if you're wondering when you're going to get it, it's going to start rolling out to Office 365 clients as of the end of January. And they claim the whole rollout will be done by mid-February, which means Paul won't get it till March.
Yep. So, okay. So the qualifiers I was going to add, you already covered one of them, which is that it's not for clients. They've never said it would be, but
they never have, right? Yeah.
No, but I have to think it is coming eventually.
Me too.
But there's also some confusion over where it's going to be. I believe it's only going to be in the cloud interface at first, right? So, unless I'm wrong, but the demos I've seen of this technology.
Right, because you have to have Office 365, right?
Well, but there's an Office. I mean, you know, there's a OneNote. Hello. There's a OneDrive client that covers OneDrive for Business. Conceivably, it could be added to that client. I suspect if and when they bring it to OneDrive for Consumers, that might be the time to do it because it's, you know, right there in the client. But to me, that's the obvious. That's, I don't know, that's how I interact with my files in the cloud, right? Not in a web browser, but in File Explorer. I'm glad it's there, but unless I'm completely misunderstanding this, if you look at the pictures of it, it's the web interface.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm you know, it's still, it's valuable. It's still good to have, but maybe I'm off base, but I don't think most people think of managing their files from the web browser.
Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing, which Taro Alhonen found out for us, was you're going to be able also to restore your entire OneDrive for Business using this thing if you need to, which is kind of
good.
Yeah,
so it's like a ransomware type thing.
Right. And people have been asking me, believe it or not, Paul, about SharePoint and when the SharePoint libraries will be supported by this.
What
and
people?
I've been told by Microsoft.
Who are these people?
Next.
People.
Many people.
People who are not named Todd Clint
are
asking.
Many people are saying.
I've heard. Everybody.
But SharePoint Libraries is next up to get the files restored treatment. I just don't know when, but it's on the roadmap.
That's incredible. They think they're people now.
I am ready to get a new Xbox Elite controller, not because mine is worn out, but because somehow it has migrated elsewhere in my facility.
Yeah, yeah. And mine has fallen apart. I love the Elite controller.
Yeah, you play hard.
I drop it a lot. I was telling Brad this, you know, if you think about a typical multiplayer game where the game ends and I might be in the final kill somehow. I either killed the guy that is the final kill.
Drop it, Paul, or throw it.
No, I don't do anything with it. I leave it on the table and I get at the desk. And I get it to go to the bathroom. I get a drink or whatever. And because it's now playing in the screen, the controller vibrates on the table.
It vibrates right way off.
And then it explodes. And the central strength of this controller is that you can replace all the buttons and everything.
It explodes.
But if you drop it on the floor, all the pieces go everywhere. And it's really hard to find all of them. So anyway. The current Elite controller is based on the previous generation Xbox controller. So it's lacking two features that would be super useful to have, and they will be in the new version. One is Bluetooth compatibility, so you can connect it to any Windows 10 PC wirelessly. Yay. And the other one is the addition of a headset port, like a standard headphone jack, so that you can use any headset, and you can use voice control. Or just
Will the headset work with a microphone? So it's one of those microphone headsets.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, good. Nice.
Yes. So now that, especially with Kinect going away, this is emerged as the only way you can interact with this thing with your voice now. So it's kind of important to have that kind of thing. So
USB rechargeable too. I like that. USB-C, I should say. USB-C rechargeable.
Is that what that says?
Yeah.
Okay, that
I'm reading the article on this site called Throt.com.
No, I didn't write it. What I'm describing is the differences between the current gen wireless control and the previous gen. This will be based on the current gen, so that USB thing is USB-C.
It's not USB-C on the current gen, is it? It's micro USB.
It is micro USB.
This is going to be USB-C now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm not sure how much that matters, but
oh, it matters, Paul.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you why. One thing is.
Yeah, but
wattage.
Let me ask you this, Leo.
Wattage, baby. If you're recharging via USB,
like a micro
or micro USB, you can't charge.
It's probably USB 2 as well. Yeah,
USB-C would have up to 100 watts. I mean, you could theoretically charge it faster.
But
I don't know.
Does the Thunderbolt 3? Can I drive two 4K
it's
displays?
Not Thunderbolt 3. No, I'm sure it's USB 2.
So the bad news on the controller is the price is still going to be very expensive. I think the current one is $129. Totally worth it, by the way. But the availability is unclear. And, you know, frankly, given the release schedule for Xbox stuff, it's kind of reasonable to think it might not even ship until the fall.
You know what else is cool?
We don't know.
Because I read the article on Therat.com. The case is is a charging case.
The case is a charging case.
You know, kind of like the AirPods. So you keep the case plugged in via USB-C.
And you just place it into it.
You place it in the case and it's recharging.
Oh, I like that.
Yes, I thought you might. I like that. So, you know, if you get a premium,
I don't actually read articles on this site, Leo. I don't know.
You can read them all.
I barely talk to the people who write these articles, frankly. But
this comes from a leak on a forum, on a Baidu forum, yep. I guess.
Oh, but I should mention, by the way, the reason it's on the site is Brad found out about this controller several months ago and was asked not to write about it.
Oh, okay.
And when this leak happened, he went back to his source and said, hey, is this it? And he said, yep, that's exactly it.
Good.
So we felt comfortable.
Well, I'm going to hold off. I know this is why they didn't want anybody to know about it, on buying a new one until the new one.
So we'll see. I don't know. We just don't know what the time is.
I have my nice day one Xbox One X controller, but it's just like any other.
It's fine. It's just a basic wireless controller.
I'm elite.
Pedestrian, one might say.
And I see that you're playing PUBG now.
Yeah, I mentioned PUBG because Mary Jo brought it up. I did.
Really? Believe it or not.
Is it running on Azure? Yeah. Is it Hadoop enabled? What's the deal?
No.
So PUBG is interesting because there are 3 million people apparently playing it on Xbox One, which blows my mind because it is terrible. It's really terrible.
You know what's really good? It's the same as the Battle Royale in Fortnite. I really enjoy it on Xbox One. It's really fun.
Coming from Call of Duty, there are two issues for me with this PUBG. One is just diversity of game types, right? There's one game type, basically, one map, basically. You go in, it's like one and out. If you get killed, you're done. And I find it to be a lot of creeping around, and then you get killed and you're done. And the only question is, what was I, number 78? Was I number 22?
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
No, it's very simple, the Battle Royale concept.
But there's also, you know, when you move between shooters, it doesn't matter what game, you know, Halo to Call of Duty to Battlefield, whatever it is. You know, these things have a certain feel to them. And this one is very awkward compared to any of these other games. I don't know exactly what you're saying.
I don't know why.
I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's awkward. It almost, it's not quite a frame rate thing, although it's probably part of it. It just feels weird.
So try Fortnite. Okay. You can play it for free, which is one of the advantages. And they have – it's kind of funny because this is the battle bus.
Awesome.
So it's a little more cartoony than COD.
Yeah,
but
that's okay.
It's same gameplay except that they have, I think, more interest. You can build a fort, for instance. You can build
– So this looks a little bit like Overwatch to me, kind of graphics.
It's Overwatch-y graphics.
Yeah.
And it's Battle Royale. They have a Battle Royale, but they also have a P versus E version. But I really enjoy Fortnite. And the thing is, I'm terrible at these games. I don't know if PUBG did this, but with Fortnite, it immediately goes into spectate mode when you die. And you can watch the rest of the game, which is quite fun because you continue to follow until you get to the winner. So this is the fort you can build, which is kind of cool.
I do think there's a thing to PUBG, and you can see it in this game too. There's an e-sport element to these games
that I think
makes them very popular with people who are not playing the game.
Right, they're fun to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Did you see that? You would love that, Paul. Rocket launcher.
Rocket launchers are one of the things I miss.
I know you're a big rocket launcher guy. Rocket launcher, yep. Guy trampolines into the air, hits the rocket. Awesome.
Yep.
It's got good sniping capability. Anyway, it's free. So I just would give, that's not 4K, but I would give it a shot.
It's okay. I don't care. I want it to run fast and it looks good. Fortnite. It's okay.
I like it a lot. Should I play the crickets now, Mary Jo?
While you guys were chatting about PUBG, I just tweeted that the Linux Foundation has a new course called Administering Linux on Azure. Talk about amazing. Forget about PUBG.
Wow.
By the way, quick update. I ran the HP support assistant on this computer, and sure enough, the one thing that's available is a new system BIOS.
Yes.
So I'm going to install that right now because what could go wrong?
Perfect timing.
Good time to do that. There's only 18 reboots ahead of you.
I'm going to do that after the show. So if you would like to hack me, I would say you have about 17 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Let's take a break. When we come back, the back of the book, the tip of the week. And I have one. I'm going to throw one in. Little program of the week for everybody, which you probably already know about if you watch our shows religiously. And if you do watch our shows religiously, Father Robert Ballester will be available for confession later.
I need that.
We all do, Paul. We all do. Man of woman born, my friend. Man of woman born. Our show today brought to you by, I don't know what that means. It sounds biblical, though, doesn't it? So does Emmaus, for that matter. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. You know that in last year, there were 1 million unfilled computer security jobs out there. This is if you are looking for work, if you're just getting out of school and you're saying, what am I going to do? Or you got a job that just doesn't, ring your chimes. You know, you're listening to this, you're thinking, I want to do more computer-y stuff. Check it out. itpro.tv/ww. It's the fun and entertaining way to sharpen your IT skills, whether you're trying to get into IT. And, it's the unfortunate, you already know everything. If you listen to our shows, you are obviously ready. But it's the unfortunate state of the industry that first job's hard to get. It's hard to prove you know that stuff. And that's why the certification system exists. And there are certs in everything now. The beauty is you can get any IT cert at all. You can do the training, learn what you need to know, and be ready to take the test. They even have practice exams at itpro.tv. Certified Ethical Hacker, I just like the name of that one, but you got your CISM and your CCNA and your MCSE, all the A+, all of the certs, ISC squared, ITIL, all of the certs. They have courses that you can study. In fact, if you go to itpro.tv/ww, look at the course catalog. You'll see it's growing all the time because they have now 5 studios, many of them live throughout the day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So that means they're adding about 125 hours of content every week. Thousands of hours of on-demand training in every possible area. Kali Linux, Linux security techniques. I mean, everything. Azure, of course, Office, maintaining Windows computers, all of that. You can watch on your big screen TV. They have a Chromecast. They have a Roku app. They have an Amazon Fire TV app, Apple TV. You can watch it on your PC, of course, stream it from the website. They even have iOS and Android apps. So you can get up in the morning, have it on your big screen, get in the car, go to work, listen on your iPhone, get to work, have it on the screen and your computer as you're working in a little window. And I think even just by osmosis, if you're watching throughout the day, and their flat rate pricing means you can watch throughout the day and absorb all this. Even if you're already in IT, you're broadening your skill base, which makes you more valuable and better pay, right? All right. So join the 85,000 IT Pro TV members. Most of them, I would say the vast majority of them who are listeners to Twit, whether it's Security Now, Windows Weekly, that's where they come from. So there's people you know already. They have a chat room. You'll recognize friends in the chat room. They have a Q&A, like study groups online. So it's a lot like going to a technical school at a fraction the price. Friendly training. Their presenters are great. Binge-worthy content and life-changing results. I mean, what more could you ask for? We've got a good deal for you. If you go to itpro.tv/ww for Windows Weekly. There's a code, WW30. So here's what you get, a 7-day free trial. And with the code WW30, if you decide you want to stick around, you'll get 30% off the monthly subscription for the rest of your life. As long as you stay an active member and you want to, you know, even if you've got that perfect job, the reason you have that perfect job is because you got the skills. You want to keep those skills up to date. Premium subscriptions include the Transcender practice exams, virtual labs. Now, this is the deal. Normally, they're $857 a year, $600 a year if you use the code WW30. That is, compare that to just buying the materials. Or, I mean, it's a tenth of what it costs to go to a technical school. itpro.tv/WW. Don't forget, WW30 is the offer code. They have a very, very, very good group discounts. I can't say the commercial business names, but I'll give you an example. Harvard University, they have a group plan. There's a great portal so that you can, as the manager, you can go in there and, you know, assign training. You can check how people are doing, all of that stuff. If you want to know more about that team solution, you can do that as well. You can sign up for a demo of the supervisor portal. But do use this address so they know you heard it here. itpro.tv/WW. Make this the year you do what you've always wanted to do. Get into the IT business. itpro.tv/WW. The great jobs are waiting. They really are. All right, time for the back of the book. Let's kick things off with PT. And I'm not talking physical therapy.
Although I clearly need it.
Did you see there's a new girther movement? They don't believe that Paul's height and weight are what he states they are. Did you see that?
No. Like, oh, God.
I've never stated my height or weight. What do you mean?
I'm kidding. I'm teasing you. Pick of the week. Tip of the week. Let's start with the tip of the week.
And actually, and a weird coincidence given that last advertisement. Google announced this week that they were providing a free IT support professional certificate through Coursera that normally would cost you $49 a month. It's aimed at people who are beginners, people who are not IT pros, who want to get into this business. Nice. And they note some statistics, you know, 150,000 open IT support jobs in the United States alone. Average starting salary is over $52,000. And it's basically an 8 to 10 month program that you kind of do part time virtually, and you get the certificate, and then you can use it to help get a job. In fact, they even have a job placement service. If you don't mind opting in to share, you know, how you did in the course.
That just shows you how much demand there is at this point. And from Google
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Google. In fact, the reason this exists is because several years ago, Google was having trouble finding talent. Yes. And they eventually started looking for what they call non-traditional
Trainable people, basically.
And it was so successful, they said, you know, we should turn this into a thing. And it became a course. And now they're basically offering this for free. Google does a bunch of stuff like this. You know, they have developer training for free through Udacity, for example. Yep. And it's kind of cool. That's kind of a cool thing.
They have a developer cert program that you can get for free. Things like that. That's great. Good tip. Yep. Pick of the week, app pick.
So this one's actually going to be done by Mary Jo.
What? I'm confused. Yep.
We're confused. I know we're mixing it up.
Mixing it up, keeping you on
Everything's
your toes.
Different.
The app pick of the week is PowerShell Core. So if you like PowerShell, you might be interested in this. So this is not Windows PowerShell. This is not your father's PowerShell. No. This is cross-platform PowerShell. It runs on Windows 7, 8, 10, Windows Server, and all the Unix flavors that you love.
What?
Ubuntu, Debian, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and Mac OS.
That's crazy talk.
Crazy. Yep. So here's a couple caveats about this. Just like .NET Core, PowerShell Core is basically a splinter of what's going on with PowerShell. So the thing that has been called Windows PowerShell is at the end of the line. So if you're on 5.1, that's it. Yep. There's no more Windows PowerShell.
What?
You can stay on that. It's going to be supported. If you decide to go to PowerShell Core 6, which is the first version of PowerShell Core, even though it's called 6, you should know that you might want to take a look at all your scripts, because there are people who are saying just about every script breaks because there's a lot of features that are in Windows PowerShell that are not supported in PowerShell Core. So check it out. It's the future of PowerShell. In fact, Jeffrey Snover said it's the most exciting change we've ever made to PowerShell. But you got to be careful in moving to PowerShell Core if you're on Windows PowerShell.
Well, okay. Now, here's the question. Are those features that don't work anymore deprecated, or are they going to be added later?
They said they're going to try to add as many of these as they can. Things like PowerShell workflows, snap-ins, commandlets, desired state configuration, resource execution. If you use any of these things with PowerShell, you should take a very careful look at going to PowerShell Core.
Interesting. Okay.
Still, it's kind of exciting. PowerShell going cross-platform, right? It's the future.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Yep.
Now, who's going to do Object Desktop?
I am.
Okay.
just a quick mention there, because Stardock released the new version of Object Desktop this week. It's on sale right now for half price. So if you've never bought it before, you can get it for $25. Ugh. It's an incredible suite of kind of management and customization apps or utilities that include, by the way, Groupy, which is that thing that Microsoft's trying to add to Windows 10, the ability to drag Windows onto other Windows and make them tabs. And so, in fact, during the recording of the show, by mistake, I grabbed a chat window I had with Mary Jo and pulled it on top of Skype. And what it did was make the window two tabs,
one
of which was...
Groupie.
Yeah, the main window.
Hey,
yeah, groupie. Pretty neat. But there's a bunch of other stuff in there too. By the way, if you're an owner of a previous version, you can upgrade for up to 70% off as well. So, just something to know about it. Just happened this week.
I just bought it because I want a groupie. I wonder if I.
Yeah, I just got it too.
Yeah. Okay. Good. My pick. Yeah, Leo's got one.
Yep.
But I think many of you already know about it because we talked about it yesterday on Security Now. Steve Gibson. Did a really, I think, a really good thing for the community. He realized that the PowerShell script that we talked about last week, the Microsoft Speculation Execution Validation, despite having the catchy name, isn't really that easy to use. And he's even more obscure in what it means when you use it. So he went out and he wrote in assembly language, so it's tiny, a standalone EXE called Inspector. That really is great. It tests your PC for Windows, Meltdown, and Spectre fixes, and then even goes a step further and tells you what performance hit you can expect. And if you want to read more, you scroll down. And it's free. It's easy. If you Google INSPECTRE, it's the very first hit on Google. And it's from Steve, so you know it works well. It's easy to uninstall and get rid of. It has a couple of features I've never seen in any of these scripts before. One, it's completely standalone. There's no dependencies. You doesn't have to be online, none of that stuff. It gives you very good explanations of what's going on. It's instant. So I've seen some of these.
That's incredible.
They're trying to make you think they're doing something, so they kind of be patient while we scan your system.
Yeah, they churn or whatever.
There's nothing. It's a CPU ID query. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he doesn't fool around, but he also has the ability to disable protection for Meltdown Inspector and re-enable it. So if you aren't getting a big performance hit, you can temporarily say, look, I want to turn off the fix so I can, you know, when I need the performance. He did a really bang-up job. Unfortunately, not really Windows, Linux or Mac compatible. I tried running. It does run in Wine, and you'll get some information, but I think Wine doesn't give you a lot of the detail that, you know, you're kind of hiding what's going on. A lot of good explanations on the page at grc.com, Steve's site, Google Inspector, or just go to grc.com/, and Steve's so old school, I love his URLs, /inspector.htm.
Jeez. Obviously made in Front Page 98.
Yeah, no, hand coded. But you know, why put the L in? You know, it's just enough. It's 8.3. Okay. Everything's 8.3 in his world. He's never left that. So grc.com/inspector.htm. Bless
amazing.
Steve's heart, because it really is good. And it downloads instantly. It's like 143K. He said 93K of that is the high color icons that Microsoft requires.
Oh, man.
It's really only a 30 or 40K.
I also
K
noticed
utility.
That it makes a little chime sound when it starts, and I can only imagine how much memory that took up.
Yeah. So even though it's one of Steve's tiny assembly language utilities, it's a little fatter than it would be because of the icon.
It's scalable for Windows 10.
Let's go back to Mary Jo Foley because it's time for our. Unless, Paul, you're going to do an enterprise pick of the week.
Nope.
We talked about that, but no. Yeah,
you couldn't think of anything. All right.
So there is a Microsoft MVP whose name is Luca Vitale, and he created this amazing chart called Skype for Business and Teams Feature Comparison Table. Oh. Sounds not very interesting, but. If you've been following along at home and trying to figure out which Skype for Business features are already in Teams and which ones are coming when, you will want to go find this chart and download it because it's all in one place with many colors, green, yellow, red. It's very easy to read once you download it. So there's two ways to find it. You can go to Luca Vitale's blog, which is Luca Vitale, LucaVitale.wordpress.com, and go find it there. Or do a search for TechNet, Skype for Business and Teams feature comparison, because somebody over at Microsoft saw this and said, hey, we should cross-post this because it's so awesome. And you can just go download it. It's free. And everything you want is there in one place.
I don't know whether to be more impressed by Luca's initiative or by the crazy number of features in Skype. Yep. This is insane.
Yeah. So, I know this is a big undertaking, right? Ultimately phasing out Skype for Business and putting all these features into Teams. It's going to take this entire year if they even make their own projected dates.
Wow.
That's incredible.
This, like, I'm like, where was this chart at Ignite when I was trying to write about this? Oh, man. That would have been way easier.
There is also a bit.ly link, bit.ly/SLBVS TEAMS. I think bit.ly is case sensitive.
Easier.
That's why I say the caps. If not, it's easy. SFBVS Teams.
Yep.
But there you have it. And you can Google.
Well, I think he disqualified for MVP next year too. So nicely done.
Yeah.
No kidding. Yep. Wow.
I think he's done.
Yep.
Yeah.
And code name.
So this one I'm doing.
Obviously. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm so confused.
I was fascinated to discover that there was a project I'd never heard of that was trying to bring Windows NT down to a smaller system size that predates Windows 95. In other words, if this thing had been successful, it's possible that Windows 95 might not have happened. Because it kind of addresses the same part of the market. You know, Windows 95 was an attempt to bring the DOS plus Windows world up to sort of a hybrid 32-bit computing environment, bring forward the, I forgot the name, the Cairo shell, you know, that they were working on for Windows NT and kind of, you know, shoot for the future a little bit. But Microsoft also had a project, the codename was Panther, which again I'd never heard of, which was an attempt to get the Windows NT kernel running in just 4 megabytes. And so, they had there were 32-bit versions of user and GDI that are the Windows NT stuff, and then they have the 16-bit versions of those as well, which were converted into 32-bit versions for this project. But the way it worked out was that in 1990, whatever year, this must have been 93 or whatever, NT was just too big. There was just no way to make it fit. And so they kind of flipped the equation and went at it from the Windows 3X end, and they came out with Windows 95, which introduced such wonderful things as Win32S, and the hybrid 32-bit, 16-bit, so long ago, you know, system that we forgot about. You know, they hid DOS, even though it was really there, and blah, 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 whatever. But I literally had never heard of this. And this comes, I should say, courtesy of Raymond Chen, who is just one of the most awesome things about Microsoft, as far as I'm concerned. He writes about the most esoteric kind of old-school programming topics on his blog, which is the old new thing, which you can find on the Microsoft Developer website, the MSDN website. But this one's a little more mainstream in that a lot of people would be interested in it. But I, you know, one of the, like, as a guy who kind of like learned kind of what I would call Petzold style C programming for Windows 3X back in the day, and by back in the day, I mean like almost 30 years ago, to see a headline like he had, like, why does, why? Just some of the headlines he has, they're just so, they make no sense today It was like, I think it was white as H in, or H result. Yeah. H result begin with H when it's not a handle, which is just would make no sense to any normal human being. But, anyway, it's just, his blog is beautiful and it has this awesome post about Panther, this thing I had never heard of.
Panther. I know. I was trying to remember if I had ever heard of Panther. I don't think I did either. There were a lot of city code names, right? So Panther's
Cairo,
kind of
Chicago,
an outlier here. Yeah.
Yep. Daytona and so forth. But he alludes to the fact that Microsoft at that time had other cat-based names for projects.
Along came Steve Jobs.
Yeah. I just cannot. I'm positive I've never heard of this.
Like Neptune and Odyssey. Those were other weird ones around that time right?
Yep. Memphis was Windows 98, I think. There were various, I think Daytona was one of the Windows 98 versions. Neptune was something that came off of 98/NT.
Wasn't there Tuckwilla?
I don't remember, but maybe. I'm just going off the top of my head.
You also, if you go to this Raymond Chen blog post, he cross-links to the Windows 95 ship date projector.
Yes, right.
Which is hysterical. Which is amazing.
Yes.
You can actually predict the date based on all of the memos that came out pushing the date.
We've got to try to get him on Windows Weekly one of these times.
Yeah.
He would be a great guest on Windows Weekly.
He is amazing. What's that guy that used to be on Star Trek that is kind of famous for not, you know, tweeting and blogging and stuff? The Asian guy.
Mr. Sulu.
Yeah. What's his real name?
I don't know.
He's that guy from Microsoft. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it.
No, he's super funny, but deadpan funny.
Yep. He's amazing.
You don't know he's funny till the joke's on you.
Exactly.
Well, golly, we've all worked so very hard today on the
episode. Why doesn't H result begin with H?
You see, that's a joke? Really? Okay, see. We've worked so very hard today. I think we deserve something tasty, a treat, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Jo,
she tried to cajole me into doing this one, too, but...
I'm like, you want to do the beer pick of the week or a cocktail pick of the week? He's like, no.
Can I be fair here? As much as we know Paul is a beer drinker, everybody wants your pick, Mary Jo. That's really...
Okay. So this is a fun pick. This is for our UK listeners. This is a beer brewer in Manchester called Cloudwater. They're really up and coming and making some amazing beers. And what's cool is they are making a lot of American-style beers, like many new... English craft brewers are.
Did we visit this place?
I can't remember if we did when we did our beer tour.
Did we have this there? I can't remember. Yeah.
I don't know. But this one that I got to try recently is called Cloudwater New England Double IPA. So it's funny. Here's a New England style IPA from an old England brewer, right? So this tastes like any excellent American New England style double IPA that you've ever had. And it's brewed with Citra and Mosaic hops. They have other varietals too. And the way I got to try this was a friend of mine from England came over, Alistair Frost, thank you, and brought me a can of it. And it was so crazy. I opened it and I'm like, it looks and smells and tastes just like a New England style IPA. But it's made by Cloudwater in Manchester, England.
Nice.
So there you have it. If you see any of their beers, if you're over there, they are
a lot of words I don't like in that name, like IPA and Citra.
I know. You don't like any of this. This would be not your beer choice, but if you like an aggressively hopped double IPA, this is for you.
Hashtag Namabe. Namabe. All right. Yeah, I like IPAs.
So they're good.
We had a visitor yesterday. He said, What's with you Californians and IPAs? That's all I can get out here. I said, go over to Lagunitas. They have some other stuff, too.
They do.
Although excellent IPAs. Ladies and gentlemen, the clouds have rolled in. A sad, sad time when we have to say goodbye to Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley and end the week's episode of Windows Weekly. But there's always some good news on the other side, a silver lining that they'll be back next week, every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Whether you want it or not.
1900 UTC. You can tune in live at twit.tv/live. Join us in the chat room. Great bunch of people, as always, in there. Just go to irc.twit.tv. Is it George Takei you were trying to remember?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
All you have to do is say, oh, my. Oh, my. Yeah, the chat room knows. It always knows.
Mm-hmm.
You can also listen to the show after the fact at twit.tv. Just go to twit.tv/WW. All the shows are there. All, what is it, several hundred, 553. Holy cow. And if you subscribe in your favorite podcast app, you'll just get it automatically the minute it's done. To give us a little time to edit out the swear words, and we'll have it out for you.
Is there more overhead to this show than other shows, would you say?
No, this is actually, it's funny because Kevin comes to me after almost every show and says, anything I need to cut out? And I say, nope. This show is as clean as a whistle.
Wow.
And twice as piercing.
Let's get a couple of drinks going and fix that problem.
You'll find Mary Jo Foley at her ZDNet blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. I hate to call it a blog. It's a microsite. It's a, what do you call it?
A journalistic
call it a
endeavor.
Magical,
in digital
artificially
form.
Intelligent.
Yep.
That's it.
Everything you want.
It's a Cortana-enabled blog.
Yep.
Paul Thurrott. We don't know what the hell to call Thurrott.com, but no. there it is, thurrott.com. Even Paul can't read it all. That's the slogan, by the way.
Even Paul doesn't want to read it
That's
all.
That's the slogan, yeah. And Paul's books are at leanpub.com. Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you for a great show, and we will see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye.